It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
We are up, we're running, and ready to roll on another game week. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. It was a tweet this morning from a good friend, Jan Allgood, who used to be the executive administrative associate to Greg Davis when he was the offensive coordinator of Texas. Jan, who quite often will retweet some famous sayings, sometimes are unknown, and her unknown saying today was, "May your coffee kick in before reality does." Could not agree more. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Also, pleased to be joined by my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County and a proud graduate of Florence High School. Also, of course, former all-district offensive lineman of the Florence Buffaloes. You knew him back then as Highway 79. You know him best now for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. That would be Jeff Howe. Good morning to you.
I was wondering when our show was going to start this morning.
Hey, you know, I heard Bucky and Aaron said, "Oh, we went fourth quarter." No, you went nine overtime, Big Ten overtime.
No, because the Jake Spavital interview was better than whatever that was that I watched on Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Jeez,
and we're always good with Coach Spav being on. So glad he was able to join the guys. All good, and glad to be. And you're right. That was rough watching that, but it was the car wreck you couldn't take your eyes off of. What's going to happen, right?
Well, it got to like overtime number six, and you know I really want to watch Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and I'm thinking,
yeah,
that I'm already pot committed at this point. I might as well just stick it out and see how long this thing lasts.
Yeah, and it wound up going a total of nine overtimes. Now my
goal, Craig, by the end, there got to a point like probably overtime seven or eight where I'm like, yeah, can the winning score match the number of overtime periods? That's kind of what I was going for.
Yeah. It was messy. So, but hey, Brett Bielema will take it. Like you tweeted the other day. Was he gonna say it was borderline?
It was gonna be borderline erotic and champagne on Saturday night. I know that much.
Yeah, a man who leads a life and lives a life of borderline eroticism is our producer.
Jeez,
back behind the glass because nothing gets him pumped up like Flex ATX, for whom he is the major domo and everything that's good that comes out of that would be Jonathan John Donaldson, J Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. How you doing on this Monday morning, Snoop?
Good. Looking forward to some Longhorns and Cowboys. That was a lonely weekend of not gambling and no.
you managed to refrain, Snoop?
Yeah, I did. So
okay,
good.
It was boring.
You kind of cold turkeyed your way through the weekend, so
yeah,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, and it was tough, but I did it. And the fact that no Dallas and no UT was super lame, but whatever. I just concentrate on a flex.
Hey, Snoop, but our Supreme Lending picks, I forgot. Who did you take in the NFL games? I know you took Ravens over Bengals, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Did you take the Titans over the Chiefs?
I did.
Okay.
All right. So you were.
I couldn't remember.
How did you do, by the way?
I was 2-1. Clemson got me.
Okay. All right.
To pick K-State over Tech.
Yeah.
By
and then
one.
Iowa State over Oklahoma State.
Okay. All right. So you guys went 3-2 then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not terrible. We've
had your head above water.
We've had better weekends. We've had worse weekends.
I understand that. Which you could say with a lot of college football or the NFL or even me as a sporting spectator for that. I no longer have a baseball team involved in the Major League playoffs going to the World Series. So now it's Astros and Braves.
One member of this show does, though.
Absolutely.
Who would that be? Huh?
So everybody, go out, get excited about the World Series. make some noise. Bang a trash can if you get.
No, by the way, anybody got a World Series ticket hookup? I'm all ears, willing to spend some cash.
Wow. So, okay, then. World Series begins tomorrow night at Minute Maid Park with games 1 and 2 on Tuesday, Wednesday. Then it shifts to Atlanta for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if necessary, game 5. And then if they need to go back to Houston for 6 and 7, they will the following Tuesday, Wednesday again.
Real quick, because, again, I know we got a lot to get to.
Yep.
What I like about this for the Astros, I'm not even going to get into the actual matchup. But as I was watching the NLCS unfold, I said, you know, either matchup would be apropos. Obviously, the Dodgers speaks for itself as the Astros are on this redemption tour, the trash can list tour that is 2021. But the Braves, it signifies back, you know, in the 90s when the Astros were a National League team. It's the one hurdle they could not clear.
That was damn, the foil, wasn't it?
Some damn good Astros teams
yeah.
that fell to the Braves in the postseason.
That's true. Now they have a chance to... In the immortal words of the immortal Vin Scully, balance the books. They have a chance to do that when they do it. So the World Series begins tomorrow. College football, of course, comes off its weekend as well. And we're going to have a Longhorn notebook coming up at the bottom of the hour from Jeff. Also, we'll have Inconceivable. And we have an offering from the fiance she passed along to me.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I think you'll like it.
Okay.
I think you're really going to like that. So we've got that coming up. Then, of course, at the top of the hour, we bring you Steve Sarkisian's weekly news conference live from here. We're on campus, as we are on Mondays, and we'll adjourn into the press conference room for that. And we'll bring you the news conference on at 11 o'clock. We'll do that with Coach Sark and have a Longhorn notebook coming out of that just past the bottom of the hour with the recap of the news conference. So that's what we have all in front of you. But right now, what we have in front of us is our Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 performances of the weekend.
Top 5 performances of the weekend, indeed. And in keeping in the true Snoop Daniel tradition, we have a tie at number 5, Snoop. And these are totally different ties at number 5.
Okay.
Hey, can I just say this real quick, Craig, before you get into this?
Yeah?
Snoop did an outstanding job on the Whataburger Top 5 while you were out last.
Excellent. I would have expected nothing less.
We did have the 5th place tie was definitely a really big player in the presentation.
The 5th place tie, I think, has earned itself a permanent spot on the Whataburger Top 5. Because that's for people who want to, you know, upsize their water meal. Which Lynn and I did on Saturday. We did it. We didn't. I don't know if we upside, but we did a lot of meals on Saturday. So the tie for the number 5 spot, one with which Jeff can certainly identify. Thralls went over Thorndale.
Saw that. Nice win for the Tigers.
42-35. Now, Bulldogs still control their own destiny. They can win the district if they beat Hearn this week. But Thrall puts himself in the conversation. Here's what I meant by totally different, Snoop. You got that. Tied with and juxtaposed LBJ 88, yeah. Lampasas 42.
88.
You know what the best part of that whole deal was, Snoop?
What?
We had highlights of it on the show Friday night on High School Scoreboard Live on Valley Sports Southwest.
Of course.
And afterwards, we had a soundbite from Jamal Fenner, the head coach. He said, I'm proud of our kids. We did some good things. He said, but we still have to improve on defense. Because they gave up 42 points. He goes, we got to improve on defense. He goes, and we've got to improve on offense as well, I thought. And I actually said, coming out of that, I said, let it be known that this is the first time in the history of Texas high school football that head coach said, after his team scored 88 points, we've got to improve on offense. Right. That their offense was kicking into high gear. They won 88-42. Number 4, keep an eye on it, Snoop. I know you are. Bastrop 17, Conley 15.
Yes.
Who are these guys? Here comes Todd Patman's ball club from nowhere, winless, and all of a sudden they're in the thick of the fight in 14-582. So keep an eye on them. Number 3, I know you were watching it. You were there on Thursday night, Snoop. Travis 44 and Crockett 40. Looks like the Rebels indeed are headed for the postseason. Congratulations to Travis on, again, they have an open date on the schedule this week, and then they play McAllen the week after. So Travis is going to be headed for the postseason. Congratulations to the Rebels.
I saw Coach Joe Frank dance after he took the crown that they give to the winner of that game. It was pretty intense.
Did you get the video of the crown?
I did.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Number two, and this was more by the impressive way in which it was engineered. Weiss 44, Mater 19. Supposed to be, you know, the first of three big showdowns, but Weiss handling its business. Now, Friday night, Snoop, you got Weiss Cedar Park. So that's huge. And then Cedar Park Manor to close it. So Cedar Park still controls its destiny. Weiss obviously controls its destiny. But the Wolves look really good. So they beat them. And how about number one of our Whataburger top five performances of the weekend? We headed down to the current home county of Jeff Howe. How about the Wimberley Texans not only winning their showdown matchup with Geronimo Navarro, but shutting them out? Code Red defense was back in vogue. They win it 27-0 at Texan Field. We had Ashley Pickle down there reporting on that. That was a big win. That was Snoop, huge win, huge game number one in Hayes County. Huge game number two in Hayes County is this Friday.
Yes.
Oh, I'm just going to let, spoiler alert, I'm telling you right now, it's the number one, it's going to be the top matchup of the week. Unbeaten Buda Johnson, unbeaten Dripping Springs. I'm just saying. I Weiss Cedar Park is big. There's no doubt. There's other games that are big. None bigger than this unbeaten matchup for first place. And so that'll be later on in the week as we go forward. So there it is, your Whataburger top five performances of the weekend. Some impressive stuff there. Also, obviously impressive, the wins by Lake Travis and Westlake. They handled their business. And yes, San Marcos as well. We had John Walsh on with us on the program on Friday night because they managed to win that shootout game over Del Valle. So now San Marcos in the driver's seat to get the fourth playoff spot. And they just all they need to do, Snoop, I know you've already done the math on this.
Yes. I've read the text between you and Mark Honig. And
okay. Yeah. He wanted to argue with me about this. I said, no. I said I was only talking about a three-way tie break if it comes down to San Marcos and Del Valle and Aikens. I said if it comes to a three-way tie break, for San Marcos to get in, all they need to do is not lose by more than 11 to Aikens. That's it. I mean, obviously they want to win, and John Walsh was talking about that, and they've got to deal with Bowie this week anyway. But the simplest way to put it is, in a three-way tie like that, if they do it, they're in like that. So that's where they're in the driver's seat for the playoff spot anyway.
And Craig, real quick, stories like San Marcos and Bastrop are what make Texas high school football so exciting. And Glenn, to some extent, you start slow, people write you off, kids stop showing up to the games, and all of a sudden you're one of the hottest teams heading into the final stretch of the season. So
absolutely. And incidentally, another huge game this week. It won't be number one. Like I said, Buda Johnson and Drip, I'm telling you right now, is going to be the top game in the area. But I'll tell you another one. Smithville at Cuero. It's a battle for the district championship. Smithville only has the one loss in their season opener. And so it'll be Smithville at Cuero this week. That's for a district title. Speaking of Bastrop County, which is, you know, hot as a pistol right now between Bastrop High and Smithville. So anyway, so there it is, your Whataburger top five. All right, coming up, we'll have Jeff's Longhorn Notebook. Then, of course, we have, following that, our Inconceivable for today. And then we'll get you ready for the news conference with Coach Sark. So that's coming up here at the top of the hour. We're on campus today here for Light the Tower, here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9. AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at HornFM. Light the Tower here on a Monday morning. Unlike Pablo Cruz, I meant to mention this. Jeff Howell's alma mater is not out to lose. The Florence Buffaloes did fall to Lexington 47-10 on Friday night. However, Jeff Howe, I bring you hope. I've got hope for you. Yes, there's hope for you. There is hope that the Florence Buffaloes may yet advance to the playoffs. And it's not that far-fetched. It really isn't far-fetched. This all came about because of that unexpected loss a couple of weeks ago that Buffalo had to then winless Clifton.
Right.
So it brought about some real opportunity here for Florence, because what's happened is the district standings, of course, Franklin, number one in the state, is blowing everybody away, and they play Clifton this week. They're 5-0 in the district, and Rogers is 4-1. They have an open date on the schedule. Lexington's 2-2, and they play Buffalo. Then you have Florence at 1-3, Riesel at 1-3, Buffalo 1-3, and Clifton 1-3. So here's what has to happen. In essence, Florence.
Can I just say that I'm really – I've been prolonging it. I knew we were going to get here, but
– yeah.
There's something that does good for my football soul to go through high school football playoff tiebreakers. I got it. It's like Big 12 title game tiebreakers. I gotta have it. You know, it's kind of like coffee or anything seasonal. It's got to be at a certain time of the year. But once we get here, I'm all about it.
Especially where your alma mater is factored into this.
Just don't give it to me before, but go ahead and do it now.
Listen, they have to beat Riesel this week.
Right.
Because then they play Rogers the last week, and they'll probably lose to Rogers. But that doesn't matter. They got to beat Riesel. And the computer, by the way, this morning, likes the Buffaloes by uno.
Ooh.
1 point. The game's at Riesel. So they got to win that. Buffalo, you expect to lose to Lexington. And then as far as the other 1-3 would be Riesel, they would fall in. They would have the tie break on then. Clifton's going to get crushed by Franklin. And then Florence, the last week of the season, is playing, who is it, they play last, like I said, Rogers at that point. And then I think Buffalo plays Franklin the last week of the season. They a game that they'll probably lose to them. So, yeah, it's there. They still have a shot because of that one unexpected loss. So we'll find, but it boils down to this week. Huge game for the purple and white Buffaloes. So purple Buffaloes, Daddy, take note of that. Florence is closer to a postseason playoff spot than Gerald is.
I take solace in that, Craig. Makes me feel good.
Okay. Just wanted you to have that as something to feel good about.
I got to have something.
So. All right. I bet you got something else ready for us, because right now it's time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
Let's go ahead and take a look at some more one-possession game numbers. I brought it up last week because Texas, starting with Tom Herman's first year, has been in an inordinate amount of one-possession games. And just in case you need a refresher, the last 57 games this program has played since the start of the 2017 season, 31 possession games, Texas with a 15-15 record. And I went and looked at it, Craig, and as we get ready for this, you know, it's not technically the second half of the season, but we're through the bye week. There's 5 games left, and dice that up however you will. You're about to face several teams that have no problem, they have no qualms about getting themselves in one possession games. Now, nobody in the Big 12 has been in as many as Texas has, but there are 4 specific opponents. We'll take Kansas out. And by the way, tomorrow we'll do our sharp review of the Big 12. There was a minute, literally like a sliver of time on Saturday, watching that Oklahoma-Kansas game, where I'm thinking, is my stone-cold lead pipe lock of the year of the century going to happen? Kansas plus 1.5, taking the over on Kansas 1.5 wins, and is it going to happen?
You let yourself go there.
Of the Sooners, I didn't think when Kansas got up. Would they get up 17-7? I think in the third quarter.
Yeah,
and at that point, I just felt like, okay, this was nice while it lasted. Yeah, it's great, but when Kansas got up 17-7, that was the point where I was like, okay, maybe I need to start taking this serious. And, of course, that was about the point when Oklahoma decided to stop messing around and took control of the game. That said, I'll take Kansas out of the equation when we're talking about one-possession games. Baylor, Craig, in the same time frame as Texas, starting at the start of the 2017 season. And this just goes to show you the volatility of one-possession games, no matter who you are. Baylor, 21 one-possession games, their record, 10-11. Iowa State, 27 one-possession games, their record, 14-13. West Virginia, 23 one-possession games, their record, 12-11, and Kansas State, 29 one-possession games, their record 14-15. So Texas has to fix this one-possession game problem. But again, you're getting ready to start. You know, Baylor's a little bit different because the bulk of their one-possession games came in year two and year three under Matt Rhule. Like, Matt Rhule's first year, they had 4 one-possession games. They lost all 4 of them. Baylor was 1-11 that year. But Matt Rhule, stylistically, in terms of what he values as a football coach, is not all that different from what Tom Herman valued. It's just Matt Rhule had different means to get there. And I bring this up, Craig, because you look at these teams, Baylor, Iowa State, West Virginia, K-State. Other than Baylor and Iowa State's been in a Big 12 championship game, these aren't programs and teams that you think of year in and year out as being contenders for a Big 12 title like where people expect Texas to be. That just shows you when you're talent deficient in some areas, when you have obvious, you know, weaknesses against a team like Oklahoma that combines, you know, superior talent with superior scheme, right, et cetera, et cetera. You want to try to get it to a one-possession game and just take your chances with that. You want to shorten the game, extend possessions, keep their offense off the field, all that fun stuff. These four of the next five opponents Texas is going to face have been really good at getting to one-possession games. But, again, it just shows you that volatility of you can't count on to just kind of hang on or make a play in the clutch, because it really is coin flip odds once you get down to it. So that starts again. Baylor, 21 one-possession games since the start of the 2017 season. They're 10-11. Dave Aranda, Craig, just in case anybody needs it for the record in one-possession games, he's 2-3. Played 5 one-possession games through his first season plus on the job in Waco. The other thing I wanted to hit on in the notebook this hour, one of the storylines, and again, it's kind of gotten, I don't want to say it's got lost in the muck of the last two losses, but something to be mindful of and something that can sort of salvage, you know, a season where Texas is not going to be a 10-win team this year or a team that, you know, is going to be in the college football playoff. But something that can kind of salvage it a little bit and can give Sark some really forward momentum in terms of recruiting and building this program, can you get Bijan Robinson to New York? Now, pretty much, unless you've been a running back at one of these three programs, unless you've been a running back at Stanford, Alabama, or Wisconsin,
right,
in the last decade, it's been really hard to get to New York. And I just went and crunched the numbers, Craig, and just kind of pulled up some historic data and looked at it. Is starting with that 2011 season, if you look at who the Heisman finalists have been, guys that have gotten to New York.
Okay.
In 2011, and remember those three programs I just mentioned.
Yep.
Alabama, Wisconsin, Stanford.
Okay.
Here are your Heisman finalists starting with that 2011 season. Robert Griffin III won the Heisman that year. Trent Richardson finished third in the Heisman voting. Monty Ball finished fourth. What do those two guys have in common? One was an Alabama running back, another Wisconsin running back. 2013 was the year that bucked the trend. Andre Williams, the BC running back, was a 2,000-yard rusher. 6 Heisman finalists that year. And then Trey Mason just went nuts in the SEC championship game that year. He got to New York as an 1,800-yard back, finished 6th in the Heisman voting. 2014, Melvin Gordon finished 2nd in the Heisman voting. There's another Wisconsin running back.
Yep.
2015, Derrick Henry wins it, which, by the way, didn't you cover the Iron Bowl that year?
Broadcast that on Westwood One, and that was the game where I believe, I'd have to go back and look at it, they handed the ball to Derrick Henry, I think, 13 consecutive plays. Not 13 consecutive runs, 13 consecutive carries by Derrick Henry. It was fascinating to watch. The game was at Jordan-Hare. We were down at Auburn. I was doing that with Derek Rackley, working that for Westwood One. And we were fascinated. Auburn knew what was coming. Alabama knew what was coming. Everybody in the stadium knew. And they just couldn't. Part of that, obviously, a huge credit to the Alabama offensive line. But it'd be like, it was truly 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah.
It would be like 3.4, 3.4, 3.4, move the chains. 3.4, 3.4. He had one big run, but the rest was just grinding it out, much like he's doing with the Titans,
and just kept
moving the chains and moving the ball inexorably down the field, and they wind up scoring. And they won the game over Auburn because they just kept running. They could not stop the run.
So Derrick Henry wins the Heisman in 2015. Christian McCaffrey finishes 2nd. Again, Alabama running back, Stanford running back. And then in 2017, Bryce Love finishes 2nd to Baker Mayfield. There's another Stanford running back. So Bijan is looking to buck several trends. But here's some numbers to look at right now. So what all these running backs have in common – Andre Williams is the only one of those Heisman finalists in the last 10 years at the running back position whose team did not play, at least play for a conference championship.
Okay.
All those other guys, whether it's the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, they were all in conference championship games. In some cases, they won them. And in the case of the Alabama running backs, a lot of those guys went on to win national championships. Andre Williams, I think that was a 7-5, 7-6 BC team.
Right.
But he ran for almost 2,200 yards. So the numbers were there, and he was really good for BC that year. So Bijan Robinson, Craig, is going to have to do one of two things. One, he's either going to have to just post insane numbers, which is not out of the realm of possibility.
Sure.
Or Texas is going to have to get into the Big 12 championship game, which, if you look at the schedule, they've already had an opportunity to play a couple of marquee games. Like, I would consider the Arkansas game, that was a marquee game because it had a lot of eyeballs on it. We know how that one ended. The Oklahoma game, every year it should be a marquee game, and this year it was, and we know how that ended. And then you're playing a top 12 team. Oklahoma State was ranked 12th in the country when they came to DKR. That was another marquee game. And Bijan's production in those games wasn't the problem. It's just the way it ended for Texas. You really almost forget any kind of good five did because of the way things ended for the Longhorns. But I looked at all these Heisman finalists, Craig, and outside of getting marquee games, and I think Baylor's a ranked opponent, West Virginia, Iowa State the following week is going to be a ranked opponent when you go to Ames. So there are chances in terms of, you know, getting national eyeballs, getting Heisman voter eyeballs on your games. Bijan's going to have these opportunities. But I looked at all these Heisman finalist running backs in the last 10 years. And the one that really I looked at, who had the least amount of production? And you're saying the least amount of production for a Heisman finalist still means you had a really damn good year. Was Trent Richardson in 2011 with Alabama. Ran for 1,679 yards, 5.9 a carry, 21 touchdowns, averaged 129.2 yards per game. Well, Bijan Robinson right now, he's got Trent Richardson beat in yards per carry. Richardson, again, averaged 5.9. Bijan's at 7 right now. And in terms of yards per game, Trent Richardson was at 129.2. Bijan's at 132 right now. So if he continues on the path that he's on, he's going to get – and again, I think the thing that he's going to benefit from, I mentioned this last week, it's a year where there has yet to be a true front runner. Like, think about it. We're week 8, week 9 of the college football season. There has not been a clear front runner for that award established yet. Bryce Young's in that conversation. Matt Corral's in that conversation. I think after getting a win over Clemson, I think Kenny Pickett at Pitt probably in that conversation now. But that's the other thing Bijan's got going for him, is there's no true clear front runner. There are votes still to be had. So all that considered, I think one thing that could really make for a silver lining on this season, something really positive that this program can spin forward, can you get 5 to New York? The numbers are going to be in the ballpark. It's just, can you win enough games and impress the voters with what this program, what they put on the field in terms of the overall product?
All right, there it is. This hour's Longhorn Notebook. Of course, next hour it'll be the recap of Sark's news conference, which we'll bring to you top of the hour coming up at 11 o'clock live here from the UT campus. Up next, inconceivable for a Monday here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Rod Babers and Kevin Dunn light the tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
It might be inconceivable to consider talking about kickoff times as falling into that file, but it's been that way with Texas this year, and the word has just come down from the Big 12 Conference that the television selections for that week, the Iowa State week, a week from this weekend, will invoke the dreaded six-day selection window. So we will not know the kickoff time for Texas-Iowa State until at least this Saturday after the Baylor game, if not Sunday. They have until Sunday. Usually we find out by Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. But just so you know, six-day selection window being utilized. That's while we're on the subject of football, you can have a little bit of a inconceivable, right, from yesterday's National Football League action.
You think Fox is going to have Kansas State, Kansas on his big noon for that week?
Ew.
Hey, that's the Sunflower Showdown, correct?
Yes, it is.
Don't sneeze at that. Yeah. But you've also got, let's see, Oak State at West Virginia, Baylor at TCU. So, yeah.
Okay.
If it's a Big 12 game, it's probably going to be Texas, yeah. Iowa State in Big Noon.
Yeah.
Or in that 11 a.m. national window on ABC.
So, okay.
Sorry, Longhorn fans. Yeah. Don't shoot the messenger. We're just telling you what to expect. Prepare yourselves.
Got a couple other sports-related things for you. Did you see what happened in Brooklyn yesterday?
I did not, no. Is this Kyrie Irving related?
It is Kyrie Irving related. The Nets were getting ready to play their game, and protesters in support of Kyrie Irving's unvaccinated status not only showed up outside the Barclays Center, but they kind of broke through some barricades. It got a little ugly and uncomfortable. They had to close the arena for a while to clear the protesters from the main doors on the plaza and ensure that guests could safely enter the arena. So only ticketed spectators were allowed to enter after that. So they were in support of Kyrie Irving and his stance on that. But they were able to restore order, sure enough. And one other sports-related thing. We've got another Mickey Mantle 1952 card auction. Did you hear about this?
Oh, really? So I've got a memorabilia update here in just a second, but I didn't know there was a new Mantle update. What are we looking at?
This happened over the weekend. A 1952 Mickey Mantle rookie card sold for a little more than $2 million at auction over the weekend. It received, because you know you are familiar with this much more than any of the rest of us, received a near mint grade of 8.
Yeah, an 8 on that card is...
It's an outstanding for a card of that age.
Yeah, it's pretty...
It's almost 70 years old.
Let's see if I can pull up the PSA registry real quick and see. I'm assuming, Craig, that is PSA graded.
Yeah. Now, the 9 grade... Remember the 9 grade back in January, the card went for 5.2? Mm-hmm. That was back in January.
That was a 9, right?
That was a 9. This was an 8, so it only went for $2 million. Instead of the 5.2.
Let's see, the 52, man. And I think of the PSA 9s, I think there are only like 5 or something in existence. I'm trying to see if I can find it here. 3. There are 3 Gem Mint 10s in existence. 6. 6 PSA 9s. 35 on the face of the earth that PSA is graded.
You know what's most impressive to me about that whole phenomenon? That a card in 1952 could still actually be in that shape, because collecting wasn't what it is today.
Yeah.
So, you know, kids were collecting these cards. How did it stay in mint condition for 70 years?
That's where you worry about, like, has it been doctored? Has it been trimmed or cleaned or anything like that? You really do worry about stuff like that. It's one of those deals, Craig. I mean, it's like the person that just finds a Picasso in your grandparents' attic.
Yep.
Somebody brought home from the war or something and stored away and just never looked at
it. Somebody just happened to put it in a box where it was just hermetically sealed.
And it just kind of got lost in the shuffle, and boom, there it is.
Wow. Impressive.
That's wild.
Speaking of wild, I know everybody's familiar with what happened over the weekend, this horrific thing that happened to Alec Baldwin.
Well, you want me to get to the Tom Brady thing first?
Oh, yes, please do. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So Tom Brady yesterday, I'm sure everybody's seen it by now, threw his 600th touchdown pass to Mike Evans in yesterday's win for the Bucs. So Evans catches a 9-yard touchdown pass. It's a 21-0 lead for the Bucs. Mike Evans, which this is the part of the story nobody's talking about. Anybody realize that the Aggie gave the historic ball to somebody in the stands?
Yeah, everybody was saying insert your own Aggie joke here.
Exactly.
Right.
So basically there was an operations guy from the Bucks that had to go bargain with the fan to get the ball back. Ken Golden, founder of Golden Auctions, who Golden Auctions off a lot of these baseball cards and memorabilia pieces we're talking about. Ken Golden said that ball, if it went to auction, would fetch a minimum of $500,000. But probably Ezra Levine, who's the CEO of Collectible, it's another sports memorabilia platform, he said easily 500 grand, but probably closer to $750,000 is what that ball is worth. Brady reportedly requested that the fan return the historic game ball. The photo captured a member of the Bucks staff negotiating to get it back. Apparently, Tracy Wolfson said on the broadcast that apparently, you know, there was some kind of another ball is being given to the fan and some kind of signed jersey. Even if it is a Tom Brady game-worn autographed jersey,
it ain't fetching
$500,000. That's for sure. So,
supposedly, the fan said, I could not turn down Tom Brady. to Tom Brady requested. I could not turn it. So he handed it back. And then I heard Bucky and Aaron run a soundbite this morning from Brady from the news conference. And he said, yeah, we'll have to get him a helmet or a jersey or something like that.
Yeah. So this was Tom Brady's quote. He said, quote, I don't actually keep too many things in that circumstance. I felt like it might be a good one to keep. He's going to get something nice in return. We'll give him a helmet, a couple of jerseys or something. That was really cool of him to do that. But again, the value of that, it ain't going to be $500,000.
No. I think the guy will probably get a helmet and then a couple of jerseys and they'll all be autographed, blah, 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 you know, all that kind of thing. But you're right. Not half a mil.
Players have to pay in some cases for the jerseys. Like when you do the jersey swap, yeah, you got to pay for it. I wonder if Tom Brady's saying, hey, Mike, I'm going to give this fan a couple jerseys, but it's coming out of your pocket, bud.
He said Mike Evans apologized to him. Said, man, I didn't know. I'm just sorry about that. So anyway. So I mentioned this horrific thing, that shot that killed the cinematographer last Thursday. Alec Baldwin was practicing a draw from the opposite side. What happened was they were told in advance it's a cold gun, meaning there's not live rounds in it. Somehow, live real ammo got put in there. So there's still an investigation is ongoing. There's been no arrest made, and obviously he's cooperating fully with that. And then finally, this is something that the fiance sent to me. If you were to guess at the state that has the most deaths caused by animal attacks per year, what state would you guess that to be?
Colorado.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay. All right. It's not Colorado. Care to take another guess?
It's either got to be like Wyoming or Idaho.
No. I thought you were going to say Florida, which actually finished third. California was second. A lot of wildlife there. No. Folks, the state with the most deaths caused by animal attacks a year, according to Forbes magazine, is your own Lone Star State.
Really?
It's Texas. An outdoor nature resource website, Outforia, just published a list of the states where you're most likely to be killed by an animal. There were 520 animal deaths over the past 20 years in the state of Texas. Far and away, number one. California second at 299, Florida 247, jeez, although Florida probably leads in overall deaths. I don't know. But anyway, there it is. Texas, watch out there among the animals.
Snake bites, the feral hog, I'm sure, is caused.
All it is. All right. Stay tuned. Up next, Sark's News Conference here live on the Horn.
Don't miss year one of Chris Beard. The season starts November 9th.